Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Arlene Wiener. Arlene Wiener has worked as a college instructor, cardiology technician, research associate with a team developing educational software, and as an editor. She grew up in New York City, has lived in Pittsburgh for most of her adult life. In 2003, she moved to Princeton, New Jersey, and returned to Pittsburgh in December 2005. Arlene Wiener's poems have appeared in the Louisville Review, Pleiades, a journal of new writing, Poet Lore, US One Weekly, and US One Worksheets. Her new book, Escape Velocity, was published in 2006 by Ragged Sky Press out of Princeton, New Jersey. Hi, Arlene. How you doing?
I'm okay, thanks.
It's great. Good. It's great to have you here. And why don't you start with some poems, and then we can talk about the Ragged Sky Press a little later.
Okay. The first poem is actually addressed to a book of poetry. There's so much performance poetry now, and when I was coming up, most poems were more literary. The reading came first, and I wrote this to sort of reflect that. It's called Close Reading. I'm going to read you. I'm going to eye you in the store. I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to take you home. I'm going to flex your spine. I'm going to open your uncut pages. I'm going to run my fingers along your lines. Yes, I'm going to move my lips. Yes, I'm going to say every sound out loud. Yes, I'm going to get my tongue around every part of you. And then I'm going to do it some more. Till I get down to your core, till you cry out to me. I'm going to read you. I'm going to read you like you've never been read before. So now that you know how we want to be read. I think I restarted writing poetry. I had written poetry in college, but really not. And then maybe written about a poem every decade when I couldn't help it and didn't really take my poems very seriously. But I think I restarted when I realized my father was losing his memory, and I started to write a poem about my father, which I've never really managed to finish to my satisfaction. But I have written other poems about my family. And this, I'll read you two poems about my father. The first one is completely false, but sort of really true. And it wasn't until after I had written it, that I realized it partly came from seeing a picture of my father all dressed up, my father and my mother and me actually all dressed up for a wedding. And he was wearing a high silk hat, very uncharacteristically. This one is called The Magician. A carnival near the speedway when reeds grew green. Nobody so green then as a New York girl. My father shimmered. Mother stayed to learn the earliest illusion, the cup and ball. He put me like a red scarf up her sleeve. For years I watched her washing out his high hat silk, the feathers and blood. The second one is sadly much closer to the truth. I mean, my father was a very dear man and not high hat at all. But I think I thought what was between my parents was magic. The second one is called Fall Colors, and it was written in October 2001 when I was in Pittsburgh and my parents were in New York State. Fall Color. I am thinking of my father's slow fall as I walk past Mark's house, his sluggish heart, his wine-colored legs, and my mother's call to say he's spitting up blood. In Mark's yard, his two trees have begun to turn, one before the other. They burn salmon against a perfect sky. Beautiful. I must call my mother, fly or drive to New York. It's still warm. Most trees are holding their leaves, green, except those stressed by drought or disease. Soon all of them will learn what Mark's trees know. But I put by that knowledge for winter and enjoy their unusual flame for this time. I think of calling Mark to say, in March, take your son out in the cold. Tap the stripped trees. Let him put out his tongue for the slow run of sweet sap. A lot of these poems, I guess, about grief or losses, although there are actually some funny, snarky poems as well. This is a poem that reflects my walking to work in Oakland daily and scenes that I passed. So this is definitely a Pittsburgh poem, and it's called City Morning. I've passed the men holding out empty cups and passed the fair young couple, unshaped as slugs, humped under plastic on the library steps. I've seen the ornery man put off a bus and nightsticked into a wagon by a cop and muttering along the sidewalk with his legs in the starred pajamas of the mental ward. I've nodded to the blonde man with the beard leading his dogs, one with a blind blue eye, up from under the bridge into the day. But this is hard. On a table in the park, a man asleep. Around him, merchandise. His 40 balloons in party colors bob, sticks threaded providently through the cracks.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Arlene Wiener, reading from her new book, Escape Velocity. I'm really interested in this Ragged Sky poetry series. Can you tell me what it is, how it came about?
Well, the way it came about is that I was in a group, a community poetry group, very long-lived. It's been meeting for over 30 years in Princeton, based in Princeton, called US One. And one of the members, Ellen Foose, is, well, like yourself, you know, sort of an entrepreneur for poetry in a way, a fosterer of poetry. And she started a slam series at the local arts council. And she also started a reading series at the Princeton Public Library. And the reading series caused US One to grow quite a bit in number of people. And a few of us started meeting in a smaller group as well because we wanted to sort of give more focused attention to our poetry. And we became quite good friends. This really happened over a very short period of time. And Ellen is one of those women who gets things done. She's a production editor for the Princeton University Press. And she proposed that we cooperatively publish our books, the five of us. The five poets are Ellen Foose, Elizabeth Ann Sokolow, who won the Barnard Prize for her first book, Elizabeth Danson, or also called Mimi Danson, and Carlos Hernandez Peña. So Ellen proposed it, and we cooperatively worked on them and launched them all in February 2006 at the Princeton Public Library. The production values are really great. The covers are from paintings by Ellen's sister, Jean, and Jean and her husband, who is a professional graphic artist, did the design, and we're just really enormously pleased with mm-hmm. them. And they're available through Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, obviously the listeners can't see the books, but they're really beautiful books, and they're smaller. I don't know what the dimensions are, but they're smaller than a usual book and almost the dimensions of a chapbook, but they're full-length books. So that's really an inspiring story in a way, because I imagine there are a lot of groups meeting. I know there are a lot of groups meeting around the country who don't think of taking that next step to form a cooperative, publish the books, and do such a great job and with quality poetry. So mm-hmm. it's a good idea for any of you out there who have ideas, you know. And okay. Well, let's hear a few more poems.
Okay. This poem is, in some ways, I guess my greatest hit. It seems to be meaningful to people. And it's about losses, but maybe in a different tone. It's called Cancellation. Dear Sir or Madam, I seem inadvertently to have signed up or been signed up for the Death of the Month Club. And the deaths have been coming so frequently that I haven't had time to say, stop. I now have more than enough deaths to last my lifetime and can give scant attention even to the important deaths that everyone's talking about, the deaths long awaited or overnight sensations, precocious deaths. In the past, when the rubber tree relinquished its leaves one by one, or a friend's dog died, I gave them serious consideration. But I was young then, warm enough, and had hammock time for melancholy wisdom. So, dear, dear sir, merciful madam, I hope you will agree to stop my subscription, and if I have accrued any bonus points and you allow substitutes, please send me instead preserves and tropical fruits. I was reading over the poems, and I realized there are probably two poles in my thought, death and fruit. And I really mean fruit, like apples and pears, not fruit in any abstract sense. So I think I'll read one of those fruit poems, These Figs. This tray of figs in the market, fresh and round, touched green. I weigh two in the hollows of my hands. The pressed mahogany sweets my mother took to mourners' houses didn't presage soft figs and yellow lemons as in a California garden by the sea where I carried a child. I missed harsh seasons there, though the great wheel daily turned through warmth and chill. A friend sends a postcard picturing Santa Barbara's magnificent Morton Bay fig. 30 years ago, in the dazzle of possibilities, I didn't see that broad 100-year-old god. Once, though, at a coastal warfare lab, I saw with joy a spreading fig, a broad Morton fig, and dolphins at play. The rooted tree let flourish for its beauty. The dolphins, I later learned, were harnessed weapons. The morning paper says dolphins kill. Their intense play may mean rescue or assault. Yet it is play. And for play, and for the tree, the fruit, for the shade, the sun, for the dazzle of shade with sun, for the form of the tree, for the upright tree, for the spreading tree, for the form of the leaf, the small leaf, the great, the leaf like a lance, the leaf like a violin, the pore, the petiole, for the movement of air in the leaves, for the trunk with its milk, for the trunk that has no milk, for the changing from leafless to leafed, and from leafed to leafless, and for the unchanging, I, when they come to me, will pause in joy. And when it comes to me, for the sleek body tearing the water, for the seamless water, for the play of the water on the body, and the play of the body in the water, and for the eating and for the eaten, will pause in joy for these figs, these present figs, soft and ripe. Escape velocity. I'm going round and around you, or you're going round and around me, or more correctly, we are a system bound to go round and around in our accustomed places. So we're going a headlong breakneck pace in stasis, round and around like waltzing, sweating, white lips on our horses, and barring some jolt or bolt, we'll keep going round and around and around in our courses. It's as easy as falling. It is falling. Escape velocity is the energy to change, to stand still and be left behind. It is the immense amount of energy it takes to stay at rest and let the rest fall away.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Arlene Wiener, reading from her book Escape Velocity. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the movement in your poems. And I was trying to nail it down, but I couldn't. But I did notice that often there's almost a leisurely phrase, and then often followed by this slicing imagery. It's almost like, I mean, your poems don't feel this way necessarily, but almost like the walk up to the guillotine. It's like we walk up and then there's a slicing that happens. For example, in the one poem you read, there's, I think, of calling my friend Mark, and then later it says, let him put out his tongue for the slow, sweet sap. And I guess when I'm speaking of slicing, I'm not necessarily thinking of dark, but there's a lot of darkness in there too. So can you talk a little bit about that movement that expands and then comes to an edge in your work?
I think that's a very interesting idea. And I think that a few years ago, more so than now, I think, I was haunted by the sonnet. I mean, so many of my poems were like broken sonnets. You know, they weren't really formally sonnets, but they were very near that length and very, very often had a turn in them. And it's probably more my mind than the fact that that there is that turn. I probably regrettably have that tendency to be that big Monty Python foot, you know, that comes down, chung, you know. Everybody's having a parade and comes that foot.
And let's squash
or it's
them.
Not that I am that foot. I hope I'm not that foot, but I feel it impending so often.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting thing in your work. I think. Mm-hmm. Very much so. Well, that's funny because I was also going to ask you about your relationship to form. So it seems to be related that you can feel formal elements moving around and some rhyme coming in, and yet it's not that, it doesn't seem as restricted as sometimes forms feel to the ear.
Well, thank you. I was enormously steeped in form, and many of the poems that I most admire are formal poems, and form helps one remember, you know, form makes, I mean, that's what it was for originally. Before writing, people remembered things in poetry by having forms. It was an aid to memory or to memory wasn't the same as it is now. You regenerated things rather than remembering them word by word, and form helped you do it. That's people still say 30 days hath September, you know. Mm-hmm. But I did a PhD in English, and I really have hardly read any novels. I really was most interested in poetry and drama. And I've read not only all of Shakespeare, but a great many other playwrights who wrote blank verse. So I'm really steeped in blank verse. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to write iambic pentameter or, you know, to fall into that, I think. And
I wouldn't say it's easy to write iambic pentameter. Well, maybe bad iambic pentameter.
Well, yes. Yeah. I think that's one reason people don't like form, because it's really hard to satisfy the form and say something at the same time.
And make a good poem.
So it's one's tempted to stuff it. I mean, form has
formal poetry has certain vices, just as free verse has certain vices.
Right.
Free verse has the vice of just becoming, just dissolving and have, you know, just becoming prose. And a lot of formal poetry just, there's a lot of the, you mm-hmm. know, it's people stuff it. There are poets, Kay Ryan and Mae Swenson, that I could cite as using internal rhyme somewhat the way I do. I'm flattering myself, I think. And I used to try to write really formal poetry. I mean, this is in the prehistoric era before I restarted writing poetry. And it's like tying yourself up. I mean, you know, if you make enough rules, you can't do anything at all.
Right.
But I do feel related to form and feel that it has a lot of energy. And some of the energy it has is helping you discover things that you wouldn't otherwise have had access to.
Okay. Well, let's have more poems from your new book.
Okay. Well, then maybe I'll read a couple that really exhibit that kind of relationship to form. Well, I guess the one that's classically closest to being perfect, quote-unquote, is February Thaw, which is a sonnet. Although it started out being a villanelle. February Thaw. And this is very much a Princeton poem because the scene is very much Princeton. There was a road called Cold Soil Road. How's that? February Thaw. Homing on narrow roads between starved farms, I start at deer that stare into my light as I into their dark. It's Valentine's night. Cold rain comes down as if it meant me harm. A snow shovel's propped at my door, a charm against more snow. Rain sluiced away the bright twin of the house that lay against it, like a white shadow this morning. Now I feel I can't get warm. You're in a far city where my storms don't trouble you, nor do you share my flights. We meet to celebrate, observe forms, even enjoy occasional delight. Cold rain comes down as if it meant me harm. More and more I miss the heat of your arms. And I'll read a definitely Pittsburgh poem, specifically Lawrenceville poem. I was in Lawrenceville and I saw this quite delightful garden, although I exaggerate. A garden in Pittsburgh. This madcap, made much of little garden for a half house, is higgledy-piggle with cabbages, statuary, rose bushes high as my head and spectacularly red, in October with fruits, not flowers. I giggle at its pride, lions the size of Lhasa Apso's that challenge the central path, there being, I suppose, not enough room for front-facing guardians. Whatever knife cleft the house, history, law, or private wrath, left a roof sloping only one way, though no neighbor abuts, only sky. And here and now, in Lawrenceville, where the blank back of the Teamsters' Temple and radiant hall's dull front disappoint, where Home Street runs down to the avenue of exhausted warehouses, I vow, if ever I live in a half house, I'll defy the knife, plant yuccas and artichokes, pinwheels and pennants, fill a dry fountain with zinnias, erect a Venus with a ventral clock, seed clouds with flowering cabbages, live a whole life under the doubled sky. And here's the first poem that I wrote in Princeton, which I wrote after going to a reading at Princeton University. A quite famous novelist who is in much better shape than the person in this poem, but she said something that struck me, which was that in order to work, she had to lock her, when her children were young, she had to lock them out of her study. And I thought, right, I didn't do that. So this is Autograph Party. After she misspent her youth, sent her children away, betrayed her country, burned her chairs, table, house to feed her fire, broke off being a wife and shamed her lovers, caused her mother to be spat upon in the public square, after she learned to tell not the truth, but a truth and another truth and another, upraising the dark lamp of early harm that calls out shadows in others, she's earned a name and the right to read before this small audience of the callow and the balding, the uncomprehending, the appalled, leaning heavily first on the chairman's arm, then on the lectern. Then some come up praising her earliest work that she likes least and curious about the life and saying, they think they'd like to do the same, always meant to, mean to, someday. The next poem, it sort of delights me. I published it in a in something called US One, but that isn't related to US One Poets. It's a business paper that comes out weekly in the Princeton area. And I did that on purpose because I think it's meaningful to people in the environment of these days. And it turned out to be so. Somebody told me she cried. It's business jargon, right? Outplacement. When they calculate the grease is running low and they put you out on a floe with a purse of dried codfish and an oar, do not by any means row for the shore, paddling to decrease the black water between you, or watch in hope that a leopard seal, attracted to their store, consume them. Build a small fire, make fish hooks, raise your one sealskin as a sail, fix on the horizon, keep warm, move on.
It's the poetry of Arlene Wiener, reading from her book, Escape Velocity. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.